Passover, Commentary for the August 2nd, 2025 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, "Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it into the blood in the basin, and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. None of you shall go out of the door of your house until morning. When the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and sides of the door frame and will pass over that doorway. And he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down." Exodus 12, verses 21 through 23. Attended my first communion service as a teenager in a small, white, Seventh-day Adventist church in a little seafaring town on Sinclair Inlet on the western side of Puget Sound. This was in the 1960s when the Vietnam War and the fight for equal rights were both in full swing. As it was for decades, the church was not only painted white, but the congregation was also entirely of the same hue. This was not unusual because the public schools were similarly constituted. Although I attended one of the largest high schools in the state, we only had one student who was noticeably non-white. This is such a singular thing that I have never forgotten his name to this day, 60 years later, even though I may have trouble remembering the name of someone I recently met. Most of the colored students attended West Central High School, which was situated in an area where redlining had allowed their families to purchase homes. The Seventh-day Adventist Church was not alone in its whiteness. Before I became Seventh-day Adventist, I was Nazarene. The congregation there was also completely white, as was the congregation of the Baptist Church, where I attended Vacation Bible School as a child. Like all other such Christians, it never occurred to me that segregation, whether enforced or de facto, was antithetical to the teachings of Jesus. Maybe this was because all the Bible pictures I saw in the children's classes at church had a white, Aryan Jesus that conditioned me to accept whiteness as part and parcel to the gospel and church membership, which of course was believed to be a ticket to get out of hell free. When I realize how much I have changed in my understanding during the ensuing decades, I feel like the 1944 song, "Bless the Broken Road," describes my path over the years. Despite the brokenness of the church and its people, that road has still, step by step, brought me closer to understanding what is and is not representative of God's character, and when it is and is not reflected in his professed followers. We were created to be in his image, according to Genesis 1, verse 27. Until we can sort through the brokenness to see that image clearly, we can never fulfill our potential. Part of that brokenness is found in a rite the church has celebrated for 2,000 years, a rite that has roots that go back over 1,000 years more. I am referring to the communion, or Eucharist, and the Passover ceremony that gave birth to communion. The Israelites had lived in Egypt for 400 years, having moved there to escape a famine in Canaan. But what had originally been a refuge became enslavement under new pharaohs who felt no obligation to honor a 400-year-old agreement. As their lot became more oppressive, God took pity on his people and sent Moses and Aaron to liberate the Israelites. A series of 10 plagues devastated Egypt, and the people were allowed to go free. The final plague was the death of all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. As in our opening verse, those who would follow Moses out of Egypt were instructed to slay a paschal lamb and spread blood from the lamb on the doorposts and lintels of their homes. The firstborn of those who did so would be spared by the destroyer who was bringing death to the households of Egypt, from the home of the lowly field hand to the palace of the Pharaoh. The anguish throughout the country must have been heart-wrenching. We have had our own plagues in modern times that have visited us for refusing to set our slaves free. Over 700,000 lost their lives in the American Civil War over whether the federal government could dictate an end to slavery. Through Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and the battle for civil rights, thousands more have died as many modern minor pharaohs have hardened their hearts toward their fellows over who should be allowed to be equal in America. Ironically, those same combatants do not see discrepancy when they partake of communion in their segregated fellowships. At this present moment, even though there are more minorities attending white churches and more whites attending minority churches, the Seventh-day Adventist Church still maintains separate organizational structures for black people and whites. Yet we have the gall to refer to ourselves as God's chosen remnant. But this should not be surprising, for Ellen White felt that whiteness was the epitome to be experienced in heaven. She wrote in 1901, "In heaven there will be no color line, for all will be as white as Christ himself." While she had not taken such a position in previous writings, by 1901, she felt she could make such a bold statement. While this and other idiosyncrasies define Seventh-day Adventism, we are not alone. Communion derived from Passover has gone astray in the various denominations from the Passover celebrated by Christ with his disciples. While Passover requires the use of unleavened bread for the meal, reminiscent of the speed of leaving Egyptian captivity that did not allow time for the bread to rise, several modern denominations see no problem with using leavened bread, some even going so far as to advocate grabbing a loaf of white bread from the grocery store as an acceptable substitute. The metaphor that the yeast represents is lost, especially with Christ equating leaven to false teaching in Matthew 16, verses 5 through 12. Still others, including the Seventh-day Adventists, use unleavened bread, but also insist on grape juice instead of wine. While wine was not a factor mentioned in the account of the original Passover in the Exodus, it has been a part of the Jewish Passover Seder since Christ's time. It is today an essential part of Passover. While a case may be made that yeast is a contributor to the fermentation of wine, that was not clearly understood until Louis Pasteur documented it. Previously, the fermentation process was thought to be a natural boiling where the bubbles produced the wine. The action of yeast would not have been understood as a reason not to imbibe during Passover. There is an argument that the Greek word oinos is referring to unfermented wine when it is used in respect to the wedding in Cana or the Last Supper. But Greek usage does not commonly support that assertion, with far more sites supporting the idea of fermented wine than not. Nor does Jewish cultural practice related to Passover support the idea, whether ancient or modern. It has also been interesting to see the evolution of Passover to communion with what was originally a meal where some were accused of gorging themselves while the others went hungry, as in 1 Corinthians 11, verses 20 through 22. Now it is a minuscule glass of wine or grape juice with little more than a crumb of unleavened bread. No one would mistake it for an actual meal. It is laughable to think that it in any way constitutes the Passover meal the night before fleeing Egypt. This brings up another idiosyncrasy of Seventh-day Adventists. Despite all the caviling over wine versus grape juice as being authentic to the Last Supper, they, as well as most modern Christians, overlook the centrality of the Paschal Lamb to the meal. The Jews have not forgotten this, but I've never seen a lamb chop at a Christian communion service. The argument can be made that Jesus is himself the lamb, so the lamb is symbolically present in communion in the bread, body, and wine, blood. This is indeed a redefinition of Passover as Jesus modeled. However, this does not preclude the consumption of lamb at the Last Supper. That element of Passover had been essential for over 1,000 years at that point. It would have been so essential that, like Isaac asked of Abraham at Mount Moriah the disciples would have asked, "Where is the Lamb?" But no such question is found in the Gospels. Not only had they lived under the Lamb as a Passover offering for their entire lives, but offerings at the temple and the consumption of portions of the animals offered was so routine ever since the wilderness tabernacle as to be unremarkable. Since Jesus' anti-typical sacrifice had not yet happened to replace the type of the actual lamb, it is doubtful this portion of the Passover would have been omitted without comment. In practice, we see instead that Jesus' followers continued to offer animal sacrifices at the temple even after the curtain had been torn in two, denoting an end of that system. Paul was going to the temple to offer sacrifices when he was arrested years after Jesus' death, resurrection, and ascension, according to Acts chapter 21, verses 26 through 27. While all these differences demonstrate the evolution from Passover through the Last Supper to communion, it is important to remember that salvation is through Christ and not through the celebration of minutely detailed magical rites. The prophet Hosea, speaking for God, said, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings," in Hosea 6, verse 6. And Isaiah said, "If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with a pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail," according to Isaiah 58, verses 9 through 11. Be the love that God created us to be. Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to books by the author as well as additional articles. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.